Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Now, for all you Chargers fans out there who don't want to see the team move to Los Angeles to share a stadium with the Raiders, you want to stay tuned to today's show. We'll be interviewing Robert Gurman, an East County resident who is putting forward a proposal to build a new Chargers stadium and sports entertainment complex right here in East County, on vacant land where the old Cajon Speedway used to be. We'll be talking about that proposal in detail later in the show. But first, we have some local, state, and national news. Three Sisters Falls is one of East County's most popular and scenic hiking destinations. But now the Forest Service wants to close some existing trails carved out by hikers through the wilderness and instead build a more direct trail to the falls. We'll have details on our Green Scene report. Speaking of hikers, a search is on for a lost hiker. Chris Sylvia hasn't been heard from since February 16th, and now his belongings have been found near Warner Springs. Also today, hear why some San Diego caregivers are holding a vigil outside Governor Brown's home in Sacramento. We'll also tell you about a ballot initiative that seeks to overturn California's plastic bag ban and about a proposal to ban tobacco at baseball parks statewide. Hear about a bill to eliminate sales tax on diapers that's won bipartisan support from two San Diego legislators who are usually at polar opposites on key issues. Marijuana use has just become legal in two more jurisdictions, and we'll have details. Then on Crime Beat, we'll tell you about a hair-raising robbery at an El Cajon salon and how an alert citizen helped solve the crime. We'll have some health news today, including an update on flu deaths countywide, some tips on women's heart health, and results of a steamy study from Finland that's found sauna use dramatically reduces deaths from cardiac arrest. Plus, hear about a recall of fire extinguishers. From Public News Service, we'll have news about how California's safety nets are helping people living in poverty. Today, we'll also replay our bookshelf interview with accomplished author Marnie Friedman. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, public interest news for our region, because East County matters.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with some important news for hikers. Three Sisters Falls is one of the most beautiful natural attractions in East County, a trio of waterfalls and natural swimming holes in a wilderness area within Cleveland National Forest. But the falls are also among the most difficult scenic sites to access. Now, Cleveland National Forest's Palomar Ranger District is planning a major recreation management project at Three Sisters Falls, located near Boulder Creek Road between Santa Isabel and Descanso. The proposed action is to adopt and or construct a Level 2 system trail to Three Sisters Falls, as well as to decommission existing user-created trails and restore the habitat there, and to clear and construct a primitive dirt or gravel parking area off Boulder Creek Road, also adding a kiosk with educational materials. The purpose of this project is to address concerns related to public health and safety, resource impacts from unmanaged recreation use, and compromised access along Boulder Creek Road for area residents and emergency vehicles during high-use periods at Three Sisters Falls, says District Ranger Joan Friedlander. The user-created trails cross steep, rugged terrain and riparian areas. Last year, an average of 100 to 200 people a day used the trails to Three Sisters Falls, and that exceeded 400 people a day at peak periods. This has resulted in public health and safety issues, including heat illness, traumatic injuries resulting from hikers falling as they attempt to reach the falls, and lost hikers. There have also been problems with widespread soil erosion, watershed impacts, plant and wildlife harm, and impediments to traffic flow on Boulder Creek Road, including access for emergency vehicles and residents. While the U.S. Forest Service believes the proposed changes will improve safety, access, and environmental protections, a key issue is that improving access, ironically, could also increase the number of visitors to Three Sisters Falls. And that could necessitate a permit system that would restrict daily visitors, as was implemented after changes were made to trails leading to Cedar Creek Falls. A 30-day comment period issued by Cleveland National Forest is open now through March 25th for the Three Sisters Falls Recreation Management Project Environmental Assessment. A project description and a map are available online at the Forest Service website, or you can find those at the East County Magazine website in our top news section.
Caregivers from San Diego are heading to Sacramento this week to join a vigil outside Governor Jerry Brown's home in Sacramento. The caregivers who provide in-home support for elderly Californians and people with disabilities are calling on Governor Brown to treat their work equally under the law and provide the overtime pay that was promised as part of last year's budget deal. A similar vigil is also planned at the governor's residence in Oakland. As part of the 2014-2015 budget agreement, Governor Brown agreed to implement new federal rules that brought in-home care under the Federal Labor Standards Act after 70 years of unfair exclusion. The labor protections were supposed to start on January 1st, but now Governor Brown is citing an out-of-state lawsuit as a reason to not fulfill commitments to give caregivers the same overtime protection as other workers. United Domestic Workers of America held a send-off event in San Diego Wednesday morning, joined by the Alliance of San Diego, San Diego County Central Labor Council, and Rabbi Lori Cooksey of Interfaith Workers Justice. A press release issued by the organizers states that caregivers, who are predominantly women and people of color, will not relent in their efforts for justice because each day without the fair pay they were promised is adding to the financial hardship of San Diego working families. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Miriam Raftery with a special report on a missing hiker in East County. San Diego search and rescue crews are combing the mountains of East County searching for a missing 28-year-old man. Chris Sylvia left the Anzabrego Desert on Thursday, February 12th. He was supposed to meet a friend in Lost Valley to pick up additional hiking supplies on February 17th, but he never arrived. His friend told authorities he assumed Sylvia had continued his hike without stopping, but when Sylvia failed to reach his final destination in Campo, his friend became concerned and contacted the sheriff on February 24th, that's Tuesday. Also on Tuesday, other hikers found gear that appears to belong to Sylvia, including a sleeping bag, pad, and a backpack. His identification was also located at this site, which is approximately 13 miles off of Highway 79, north of Warner Springs. No photos are available of Chris Sylvia at this time, but he is described as white with brown hair and hazel eyes. He's 5'8" tall, weighs 155 pounds, and was wearing dark brown hiking boots. Anybody with information is asked to please contact the San Diego Sheriff's Department at 858-565-5200, and time is of the essence to help save and locate this missing hiker.
This is Ed Barreno. A new state law banning plastic grocery bags won't be taking effect this summer after all. That's because opponents led by the plastic industry have obtained enough signatures to qualify a measure to overturn the bag ban for the November ballot, the Secretary of State has announced. Lee Califf, executive director of the American Progressive Bag Alliance, which represents the plastic bag manufacturers, claims the law would take away 2,000 manufacturing jobs, the Sacramento Bee reported. But SB 270, the bill that banned the bags, included funds for retraining displaced workers and $2 million in loans for businesses shifting into making reusable, recyclable bags. Plastic bags are clogging ocean waters and harming wildlife when animals such as sea turtles ingest the plastic or become entangled in plastic handles. Linda Escalante, policy advocate for the Natural Resources Defense Council, says the initiative is a greedy attempt by out-of-state plastic bag makers to mislead California's voters for their own gain.
Tobacco may soon be snuffed out at all baseball parks in California if a new bill introduced by Assemblyman Tony Thurman wins approval in the California legislature. The bill is inspired in part by the death of former Padres Hall of Famer Tony Gwynn, who died of cancer related to his lifelong habit of chewing tobacco. Tobacco is already banned in minor league ballparks. Thurman's measure, if passed, would outlaw tobacco use at all baseball venues in the state. And anyone who violates the law would be cited, including major league ball players as well as fans. The bill's author says that kids and adults look up to major league ball players. This is a way to help kids be safe and help protect athletes from future use. He says, the Sacramento Bee reports, whether or not the bill will make it past first base or not in the legislature, however, remains to be seen. The tobacco industry, which is a major donor to legislative campaigns, is expected to throw its weight behind opposing reforms. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
It's rare for a labor leader and a tax fighter to agree on just about anything. But AB 717, a bill to eliminate sales tax on diapers in California, has accomplished just that. Local Democratic Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez, former leader of the Labor Council in San Diego, introduced the measure to save families up to $100 per child each year. Republican Senator Joel Anderson of Alpine is a principal co-author of the measure, which enjoys bipartisan support. The bill would add diapers to the list of necessities already exempted from state sales tax, including food and prescriptions. In addition to representing a financial challenge for many parents, lack of access to diapers can severely restrict child care options, as nearly all child care providers require parents leave a supply of diapers with the facility, and many will only take disposable diapers. The lack of child care access is often a major barrier to employment for new parents. Especially single mothers, says Gonzalez, a single mother herself who chairs the Assembly Select Committee on Women in the Workplace. She adds, there's no question that diapers are an absolute health necessity for young children, and it's time that California's tax code treat it that way. Besides keeping babies healthy, diapers need to be available to new parents to access child care for work. If we're serious about getting parents back to work and providing them every opportunity to support their families, she says, we have to ease their ability to purchase diapers. Senator Anderson issued a statement which reads, I'm pleased to join Assemblywoman Gonzalez's thoughtful approach to meeting the needs of babies. All Californians deserve a bipartisan tax break, even if it's only one baby step at a time, the senator concludes. Six states already exempt diapers from their respective sales taxes. There are an estimated 1.27 million children in California under the age of 2.5 whose families are expected to benefit if elimination of the diaper tax becomes law. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Alaska has become the third state to legalize the recreational use of marijuana, with limits similar to those in place in Colorado and Washington State, the other states where marijuana is now legal for adults to own in small quantities for personal use. In addition, city leaders in the District of Columbia or Washington, D.C., also voted Thursday to allow legal marijuana possession, subject to limitations similar to those in other jurisdictions that have legalized pot. Mayor Muriel Bowser and the city's police chief made the announcement after approval of a ballot initiative by voters. But House Republican leaders sent a letter threatening Mayor Bowser that there will be severe consequences for violating federal law, which still prohibits all marijuana use and possession. The letter, signed by Representative Jason Chavitz, chair of the House Oversight Committee, warns, we're not playing a little game here. The city plans to move forward despite the threat from congressional leaders, reminding district residents that the new law only applies to home-grown marijuana, grown indoors and used at home, not in public places, and driving under the influence is prohibited. Residents spoke loud and clear when they voted to legalize small amounts of marijuana in the District of Columbia, Mayor Bowser said, the Washington Post reports. Unlike states, however, the District of Columbia is subject to congressional review of all city laws, so the conservative-controlled Congress could potentially snuff out the newfound freedoms passed by D.C. voters to prevent the nation's capital city from going to pot. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Ed Barreno with a Crime Beat Report. El Cajon police announced the arrest of a woman accused of posing as a customer at a hair salon, then robbing an employee at gunpoint after receiving treatment on Wednesday at the salon. A witness saw the suspect flee in a dark SUV and took a cell phone picture of the vehicle and its license plate. El Cajon police officers located the vehicle in a parking lot of a commercial building at 3835 Avocado in the unincorporated area of the county. Officers searched on foot and found the suspect, 44-year-old Shannon Marsh, walking around the complex. She was arrested, and evidence linking her to the robbery was found, although the handgun used in the robbery was not located, said Lieutenant Mike Moulton. Marsh is also under investigation as a possible suspect in another crime, since she matches the description of a suspect wanted for an armed carjacking attempt reported to the sheriff's office in the area near her arrest.
Influenza claimed the lives of 8 more San Diegans last week, bringing the total number of flu-related deaths this season to 62, the County Health and Human Services Agency reports. The ages of those who have died this season range from 51 to 99 years old, and all had underlying medical conditions. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention, known as the CDC, recommends that everyone 6 months and older get a flu vaccine every year. It takes 2 weeks for immunity to develop. Vaccination is especially important for people who are at high risk of developing serious complications from influenza. The CDC has indicated this year's vaccine is not as good a match for one of the strains, but it is very well matched for the other strains. Partial protection is better than no protection, the CDC advises, and having the vaccine can help prevent severe illness and hospitalizations. Because this year's vaccine was not a good match, county health officials continue to encourage San Diegans to contact a doctor immediately if they start to develop flu-like symptoms, so that they can be evaluated for antiviral drugs, which works best if given within 48 hours after symptoms appear. Antiviral drugs are recommended for high-risk groups, including people with chronic medical conditions like asthma, diabetes, and lung disease. Even if your symptoms are under control, pregnant women, people 65 years and older, people who live with or care for others who are at high risk. In addition to getting vaccinated, people should also do the following to avoid getting sick. Wash your hands thoroughly and often. Use hand sanitizers. Stay away from sick people. Avoid touching eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean commonly touched surfaces. And if you're sick, stay home and avoid contact with others. The flu vaccine is available at doctor's offices and retail pharmacies. If you don't have medical insurance, you can go to a county public health center to get vaccinated. For a list of locations, visit sdiz.org or call 211. This is Leon Thompson with a health report for East County Magazine on KNSJ.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Stay tuned, sports fans, because today we are going to be talking about the San Diego Chargers. As many of you probably know, the Chargers have been threatening to leave town, pick up their cleats, and move to Los Angeles, where they would be sharing a stadium at Carson with the Raiders. Now, San Diego's mayor, Kevin Faulkner, has said he's committed to trying to find a way to keep the Chargers in San Diego. The San Diego City Council is voting on a resolution for the same, but nobody's quite figured out yet exactly where it could go. The old Qualcomm Stadium is old. It's no longer serving the function it needs to. You can't just tear it down and rebuild it because there's a lot of environmental issues on the site. So the question is, where should they put it? And I'm here today with Robert Gurman, an El Cajon citizen, and Robert has a unique proposal. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Thank you for having me.
Robert is with CAGE, which stands for?
Citizens Against Gillespie's Expansion, Low-Flying Aircraft.
Tell us about your proposal for where you would like to see the new Charger Stadium.
CAGE supports this expansion of Gillespie Field. It would be a Gillespie Field Sports Village on the vacant property that the El Cajon Speedway was located on and adjoining property.
Fascinating. So give us a few more details about the proposal. Why do you think this would be a good location?
The land is pretty much free and clear. It's vacant. It's prime property according to the UT and anybody that's driven by. The infrastructure is there. It's surrounded by four freeways and already has a trolley stop going to the airport. And I think it's the future for El Cajon, East County, and really San Diego and the San Diego Chargers, because there would be plenty of room for expansion.
Fascinating. Now, I've looked through your proposal, and it appears that you would be keeping the main runway, so it would still be an airport, but it would be scaled back somewhat. You wouldn't have the flight schools and so forth that you have right now with all the training that the residents have been complaining about recently, but you'd still be able to have the private pilots who want to fly in there would still be able to do so. Is that correct?
Yes, you would be keeping 27 right, which is the longest runway that Gillespie has.
Mm-hmm.
You would be eliminating the north and south runway and the southernmost runway of the airport, which is 27 left.
Now, I know that many of the business interests locally, the East County Economic Development Council and some of the chambers, have all been behind something called the Airtropolis concept, which is basically an expansion of the airport area to bring in more businesses, more light industrial. How does this tie in with that? Would this negate the ability to have an Airtropolis, or maybe they'd have to call it Chargertropolis, or how would that work?
Well, you can call it whatever you want. We always want to encourage businesses. This idea is more around sports and entertainment, but yes, mm-hmm. The aviation industry would still be there. The aviation businesses would be there. They would be scaled back. It's basically a restructuring and not completely focused on aviation. It would be a shared, if you will, metropolis mm-hmm. with entertainment, aviation, and sports.
Now, who do you envision the major backers of such a proposal could be? Who are some of the major players in East County that potentially could weigh in to help make this happen?
Well, to begin with, the Chargers themselves, the casinos.
So we might see a Barona naming rights to that stadium or something like that?
Yeah, well, don't rule out Viejas or Saquon.
Mm-hmm. There you go, either one.
I mean, they would all be probably bidding up, able to put their name on the stadium. But there's a number of entities out here that would benefit besides the citizens. To me, the first benefit would be the community. But Taylor Guitar, we have triathlons that have just started, just a number of businesses. There's endless potential.
Could we see San Diego State University or the community colleges having a place for their football teams or other sports teams to play here?
Absolutely. And the World Soccer could be played out here. Also, you know, you could put a racetrack around it like they do out at Coronado when they have the antique road racing. I've been to those with my daughter.
Interesting.
Easily adaptable to what this layout could be.
How big a shot in the arm for the East County economy could this be?
Well, you'd have to take the numbers from all the other reports that have been done, but you would just transfer the shot in the arm from what San Diego estimated to El Cajon. It's just over the valley. Basically, what we're doing is we're moving Qualcomm another valley east with enough room to bring in the Qualcomm village that they talked about years ago.
Yeah, and I see you're talking on here. Other things could include a training center, restaurants, shops, breweries, racetrack, entertainment center, tailgate party areas, and so forth.
Definitely the tailgate. With football, it's different than any other industry for the venue. You have to have enough room to tailgate. That's the problem I see with downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Besides moving all the infrastructure and the buildings and buying people out and just a huge expense. And then Qualcomm is pretty valuable land.
Have you talked to the folks with ASAP, which is the group that has been battling the flight schools out there and wants them gone? What do they think about this? I'm just wondering, if people are opposed to noise from airplanes, would they have any concerns about noise, traffic lights, and so forth from a stadium?
Their first two words were great idea. Now, I only spoke to one, the spokesperson for them, but that was what was told to me. Most of the people I present this to say very interesting, and leave it at that, because we just hit the ground on Sunday with this idea.
Yeah. Certainly, East County is an area that has a very high poverty rate in places. El Cajon has a 29% poverty rate, last time I checked, and high joblessness rates. They have many immigrants and so forth from Iraq in particular. where the joblessness rate is very high. So it would seem that this might have potential to bring a lot of jobs to the area.
Yes, and you would take the figures that are being applied to downtown and just transfer them to El Cajon. And they perceive it's a good boom for the industry or for the economy out here. I mean,
do you have any estimate on what it would cost to build this thing, and where do you anticipate the money could come from?
Well, they're all over the place as far as that. It depends on your costs of the property, of the land. And then, like I said, this is really probably the most easily built land because there's no infrastructure underground, overhead, it's flat. But the figures they kick around is any way that I've read is anywhere from $850 million to $1.7 billion.
Wow.
With the Raiders. So anything in between, but cost-wise, I think this would be the most economical place to build the stadium. The property is pretty much free and clear.
Mm-hmm. Now, I see in your proposal that you're suggesting that a lot of that money could come from the NFL and the Chargers themselves, some of it from the county and the city of San Diego, possibly San Diego State, so that their sports teams could use it. Money potentially, as we've mentioned, from tribes like Verona, Sequan, Viejas. Also, you have substantial sums proposed here from the city of El Cajon and Santee, although these would be a big chunk of their budget. How would that work? Would there be enough benefit come back, and where would the cities get this money from?
Well, if I start from the bottom, Sandag just put in approximately a $24 million second entrance on the north side of the airport. They would benefit because you would move what hangars and businesses wanted to stay mm-hmm. at Gillespie. You would move them to the north side of 27 mm-hmm. right. So, and that would be a hole-in-the-fence type setup, which the FAA has used before. So Santee would have prime property, and they would basically inherit the aviation part of this complex.
I see.
And then El Cajon would benefit directly, because it's their land and the county, from the stadium itself and all the other venues.
Yeah, it certainly seems for Santee in particular that this would be good for business for all of those restaurants and stores and things that are close by.
Correct. There's a couple of breweries, I believe, over there on Prospect. The other thing is that when I mentioned the money there, land transfers can be taken off the top. For example,
there you go.
There's 180 acres, $1 million an acre. Then you take $180 million right off the top, and that would be the county's contribution to the project. It's not hard cash. It's traded off in the value of the land. And so El Cajon would figure a percentage. And then again, mm-hmm. Santee actually has property on the airport, and they could negotiate some kind of deal.
Are you planning to go to the next council meetings for El Cajon and Santee to make a presentation directly to their councils on this?
Yes.
Okay, so listeners, if you want to be there, you know where to go. I have to ask for the record, Robert, anytime someone comes up with a grandiose development plan in East County, I always like to ask, do you have any personal stake in this? Do you own any land around there? Do you stand to benefit financially if this thing goes in?
No, I have a development on the backside of Rattlesnake Mountain where the planes come over,
mm-hmm.
and that's what made me take notice was mm-hmm. the planes all of a sudden showing up. And then as I investigated more, then I came up of this vacant property, the future of El Cajon Valley, and it has just escalated because I want to stay in Lakeside.
There you go.
And I don't want to travel all the way downtown to see a sporting venue or go to dinner or travel to Chula Vista. And that's another thing. Chula Vista got their opportunity to make a proposal to the Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
Escondido got an opportunity to make a proposal to the Chargers. Obviously, the cities have been involved since forever.
Mm-hmm.
Where's East County? Where's El Cajon? Where's East County Development Council? We should get an opportunity to make a legitimate proposal because we have the property, we have the infrastructure, and we have the heavy hitters out here in East County, which would be Taylor Guitar, casinos. Like I said, Jimmy Johnson might want to get involved with the raceway. We need, as a community, to make a proposal to the Chargers also.
Is this something where you could see this ultimately going on a ballot measure for the voters to decide?
Yes.
Very interesting. What about the FAA? What would be the challenges there of getting them to go along with this? Can you do it without the FAA saying okay?
We have, as a city, we've negotiated with the Marines down in Point Loma. We've negotiated with other federal entities before. I mean, a perfect example are the casinos, mm-hmm. the tribes. So I think it's very reasonable to sit down with the table and the FAA, especially when they have hearings about general aviation airports, mm-hmm. closing them, relocating them. There is a movement going on that airports are closing and they are being relocated.
So there is precedent for this. There are a number of these smaller regional airports that have shut down for various reasons. It's not like this is an impossible dream.
Correct. Rialto closed their airport and is building a Renaissance Rialto. Mm-hmm. Santa Monica voters just passed a referendum, and they voted to close their airport by a huge margin to make a park. So to downsize Gillespie to make room for a sporting complex, entertainment complex that includes an NFL team,
yeah,
absolutely should be doable.
Okay, and again, to reiterate for those that tuned in late, it would not be eliminating the airport. You'd still have the main runway. It would simply be eliminating some of the flight schools that have been controversial here and bringing in the Chargers to the Santee El Cajon area at Gillespie Field.
Yes.
I'm going to let you have the final word today here for sports fans across the region. What's your closing pitch here for us on why the Chargers should consider coming out to East County?
Well, first of all, I'd like to ask people to go to your website and click on, and they can see the presentation, the PowerPoint presentation, 11-page PowerPoint presentation mm-hmm. on their own and make their own decision. Mm-hmm. But really, we need the citizens to get behind this and say, hey, we want to hear this, we want to discuss this, and we want to make a presentation. I think, as the 11-page presentation says, it would be great for El Cajon, East County, and all of us out here. And it would also save the Chargers. The aircraft that would be displaced would go to Brown Field, which I'm sure the city of San Diego would love because they tried to privatize Brown Field and had no takers. And the other aircraft could go to Montgomery, where the biggest flight school came from and moved to Gillespie. It would go back to Montgomery, which is another city airport, which is revenue for the city. It would free up Qualcomm for the city. It would free up downtown for the city. And still have Ramona and 8 other airports. I see it as a perfect fit.
Okay, so it's a win-win situation in your view. Listeners, if you tuned in just now, we have been speaking with Robert Gurman about his proposal to bring the Chargers to East County next to Gillespie Field. And if you want more information, you can reach him at regurman, that's spelled G-E-R-M-A-N-N, at hotmail.com. You can also go to eastcountymagazine.org, click open our sports section. We're going to have his PowerPoint proposal or a PDF version of it right there for Chargers fans and anybody else that's interested in reading it. Robert, I want to thank you very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you. It was fun.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
This is Ed Barreno with a hot story for you to soak up. Taking saunas frequently can dramatically reduce your risk of cardiac death. That's the latest finding from a STEMI study at the University of Eastern Finland, which has just been published in the Internal Medicine Journal of the American Medical Association. The more you take a sauna and the longer you stay in that warm, steamy environment, the stronger the benefits for your heart. Those are the findings of a study on more than 2,000 middle-aged men. The study compared men who took saunas once a week, two or three times a week, and seven times a week. The 20-year follow-up study discovered that men taking a sauna from four to seven times a week were 63% less likely to experience sudden cardiac death than those taking a sauna just once a week. The frequent sauna use not only was correlated to a reduction in deaths from coronary artery disease and other cardiac events, but deaths from other causes too. The risk of death due to a cardiac event was also lower among those who spent longer times in the sauna. According to study leader Jari Laukkanen, the reasons why taking a sauna protects the heart are not yet fully understood, and further research is needed. But researchers believe that taking a sauna may reduce blood pressure and maintain blood vessel elasticity. So now you can relax in a sauna to not only soothe away stress, but also to help your heart and extend your life.
One in four California children is living in poverty, but those numbers would be much higher without federal safety net programs and tax subsidies. That's according to a new report from the Annie E. Casey Foundation that uses a new measuring tool from the U.S. Census Bureau. Jessica Midnich with Children Now says the state's poverty rate improves when you factor in programs such as the Earned Income Tax Credit and SNAP, what we used to call food stamps.
If you look at the percentage using this method, without government assistance, children in poverty jumps to 40%. That's a huge number of kids. So it really shows the value of high-quality government programs.
Midnich says California's high child poverty rate means state officials should act quickly to support investments such as high-quality early childhood programs.
We know that when you intervene early in a child's life, it makes a huge difference, and that children that have access to high-quality early learning enter school ready to learn and are really set up to succeed in school.
She says this also helps working parents because full-time infant and child care can cost up to 71% of a minimum wage earner's salary. Laura Speer at the Casey Foundation says better measurement tools are important to make improvements.
Using the supplemental poverty measure, we can really see the successes and the limitations of the safety net resources that we've put into place. We can also see that these resources don't go far enough. We still see that there are 13 million children below the poverty line.
The Casey Foundation estimates child poverty costs the country $500 billion a year in lost productivity and earnings, including costs related to health and crime. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
This is Ed Barreno with news about a recall of 4.6 million fire extinguishers sold at Home Depot, Walmart, and other major stores. The disposable extinguishers are made by the Kidde Company, spelled K-I-D-D-E, which has received 11 reports of the recalled fire extinguishers failing to discharge. When a fire breaks out is not the time to find out your fire extinguisher is not working, but that's exactly what could happen due to faulty plastic valves on these extinguishers. The faulty products were sold at major home hardware and department stores nationwide, as well as online from August 2013 through November 2014, according to the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. Consumers are advised to immediately contact Kidde for a replacement fire extinguisher by calling the company's toll-free number at 855-283-7991 or visit Kidde.com and click on Safety Notice for more information.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes rock climbing, live jazz, and R&B concerts here in East County.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including St. Patrick's Day festivities, the Ramona Music Fest, a Shakespearean play with a contemporary twist, and Vallecitos Day, celebrating our frontier heritage.
Stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more from East County Magazine. Here's an event that really rocks. Balance Fitness invites you to enjoy a free day of rock climbing at Mission Trails Regional Park this Saturday, February 28th, from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Rock climber Brandon Michael, who has over 15 years of experience climbing rocks, will lead participants on some of his favorite climbs. This event is open to everyone, whether you're a beginner or a pro. Meet up at the Mission Trails Visitor Center to participate. For more information, visit mtrp.org.
Spring is in the air, and the Hakumba hikers and walkers are hitting the trail. On Saturday, February 28th, the group will meet at the Hakumba Spa on Old Highway 80, then head out along the Border Patrol Trail to Airport Mesa and the Rock House for a 5-mile hike. The hike starts after 8 a.m., but hikers can order breakfast at 7 a.m. Dogs on leashes are welcome on this hike. After the hike, bring your swimsuit and a towel if you'd like to enjoy the mineral hot springs at the Hakumba Spa, courtesy of the owners.
Now for some jazzy news. Danny Green and his keyboard jazz trio will perform a free concert at Mission Trails Regional Park on Sunday, March 1st at 3 p.m. For details, visit mtrp.org.
Singer-songwriter Billy Ocean will perform on March 5th at the Sequan Live and Up Close Theater in El Cajon. Britain's top black recording star of all time has sold over 30 million records in styles ranging from calypso to rhythm and blues. He's won a Grammy and topped the pop charts in the U.S. and several other countries. For more information, you can visit sequan.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. The Stagecoach Theater at Grossmont College will present Romeo and Juliet with 8 performances in March, starting March 13th and running through the 21st. Based on Shakespeare's classic tragic romance, this production has a twist set against the turbulent backdrop of the Prohibition-era Chicago, blending a mafia family drama with the timelessness of forbidden love. For tickets, contact the Theater Arts Department at Grossmont College at grossmont.edu.
St. Patrick's Day weekend festivities in East County are slated for Sunday, March 15th, in downtown El Cajon at Main Street in Magnolia. Choose from a half marathon, a 5K run, or a green mile competition to compete for a large cash prize pot. Medals and free drinks after the race at the St. Patrick's Beer and Wine Festival. There's also a leprechaun challenge for racers dressed like leprechauns vying to win a costume contest. For full details, visit stpatricksdayhalf.com.
Desert artwork will be on display at the Circle of Art Show in Borrego Springs on March 14th and 15th. This juried art show will include paintings, sculptures, weavings, jewelry, and photography. For details, visit circleofart.org.
Take a trip back in time to life in the 1860s frontier during Vallecitos Day on Saturday, March 28th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Vallecitos County Park. This year's event focuses on cattle drives and cattle ranching along the Southern Overland Trail, with cattle ranching demonstrations as well as the arrival of trail riders on horseback. You can also visit with pioneer men and women in period attire, visit a mountain man camp, and hear historic talks, as well as experiencing frontier equipment, crafts, and firearms. Visitors are encouraged to dress in frontier attire. Be sure to bring a picnic lunch, since there's no food at the site. Vallecitos County Park is located in the Anza Borrego Desert on County Route S2 at mile marker 34 and 35. For information, visit sdparks.org.
The Ramona Music Fest will be held March 28th in Ramona, featuring emerging talent and popular San Diego musicians playing everything from rock to reggae and from country to Americana. This all-day outdoor event benefits the Ramona Rotary and Kiwanis Clubs. This festival will be held at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center, also known as the Rodeo Fairgrounds, at the northeast end of downtown Ramona. For details, visit ramonamusicfest.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing award-winning writer Marnie Friedman. My guest wears many hats in the field of literary arts. She is a playwright, screenwriter, ghostwriter, magazine writer, blogger, and workshop teacher. Welcome, Marnie. It's a pleasure having you here in the studio with me.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Let's start with your experience writing plays and films. I know that Playing with Mona Lisa was made into a Disney film. Tell us a little about that journey from the USC School of Filmic Writing to seeing an actual movie made of your work.
Well, it's a very complicated and messy process, but basically it was made into a play in Los Angeles, and that received some pretty good reviews, and it was based on a period in my life where I was dumped, and I was just looking at how funny it was, how down in the dumps I was, and I started to write about that and what it's like to be a young writer in Los Angeles, which is just kind of getting swallowed up in the sea of muck,
right,
for lack of a better word. And piece by piece, we decided we would put it together and try to do it ourselves. And then one thing led to another. It sounds so much smoother saying it like this, but it took years of insane tenacity for it to finally meet its home, which it ended up that Disney took it on. And we got some wonderful actors. We got Elliot Gould and Marlo Thomas.
Wow.
And Johnny Galecki and just Harvey Fierstein, some people that I really admired and loved. And it was amazing to watch it come out.
And so how did you keep yourself going through, you said it took years. What kept you motivated, inspired?
I have this thing where, do you know that machine where you get bopped down and you keep popping back up? The
right.
Whack-a-mole, that's what
right.
It is. I kind of liken myself to a whack-a-mole. Like, I just keep popping back up somehow.
That's a good trait.
I think that's kind of what you need to do,
uh-huh.
Especially when you find a piece that you really love that says something that you really want to say, then you have that belief inside of you that it's worth sticking out through all the crap that you have to go through.
Wow, it sounds like you have the right attitude. You've also worked as a script doctor for Fox Searchlight, Disney, and other film companies, and you've worked as a script agent for the Mary Sue Seymour Agency. What's it like being a script or book doctor as opposed to just focusing on your work, something that you love?
Well, it kind of goes back to your last question. That's one of the ways that I survived was, you know, I discovered that I was able to help other people. I figured out I was very resistant to plot for quite a long time.
Mm.
And once I embraced that you actually needed structure, I was able to help other writers with their structure. And I was also a dialogue specialist. It was just one of the weird things that came to me. So that was one of the ways that I was able to make a living. But it was like an honor to help other writers mm-hmm. try to tell their stories. It was the beginning, I think, of what I do now as a writing coach.
Right. So that leads to my next question, which is about ghostwriting. It's an interesting term. It means the person in the spotlight is someone else writing while you, the ghost, is hidden in the background. Well, no, you're doing the writing, and the other person has the spotlight.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So How has that affected your work, being the ghost in the background? Has that added to your tool of skills in writing and teaching?
Yes, and it stinks. I mean, I was writing for a series of how-to books, and the first time, I'd never done it before, and someone offered me the job, and I said, sure. And then looking at the book that's in the bookshelf, and you see the guy wrote, why I wrote this book. And it was the most frustrating thing, because it was like, you didn't write the book, dude.
Exactly.
So it has an element of being stinky. So I try not to do that. But if it's someone that really has an important story to tell and they just don't have that as their skill set, then it's, again, it becomes an honor to help that come to fruition.
I see. Then you become that person's voice.
Yes. You know what? The word voice, I think, is so much about what I'm supposed to do on the planet. I know that might sound kind of weird, but helping people to find their voice. So when I'm ghostwriting and it's actually allowing them to say something that they really want to say, like I'm working on somebody's memoir right now, there's something incredibly inspiring about helping them to get, you know, to do something they wouldn't be able to do and put a message out there.
Okay. I know that you teach writing workshops at San Diego Writers, Inc. in the UCSD Extension and that you run three popular writing groups, the San Diego Screenwriters Group, the Monthly Memoir Club, and the North County Writers Circle. And you're also a therapist for writers and artists. We know we need therapists. In your opinion, how does teaching really make a difference? I mean, not just to your students, but the writing community, like running these groups. How does that add to the community?
Well, I kind of have a passion for, when I first came out to San Diego, I realized we were all really separate. And, you know, sometimes in San Diego, it's very hard to be connected. And I started the San Diego Writers Network newsletter because I was traveling all around the county to, you know, from one group to the other, workshop to the other, but everyone feels very alone.
Right.
Often writers feel very alone. And there's something really magical that happens when a group comes together and they really want success for each other. Something very nurturing, and it's wonderful to be able to facilitate that for people. And then just having the training as a therapist, a lot of times, like in my monthly memoir group, that's the first Saturday at Writers Inc. Of the month. It helps with, you know, because sometimes with memoirists, they're traveling to really hard places. Mm-hmm. And so the therapeutic training kind of helps them to be safe and to actually go there and get their material out in a safe environment.
It seems like a really good marriage, if you will, the therapy and the...
It's weird. I didn't plan it. Mm-hmm. I feel like I kind of fell backwards into it, but it feels very much like what I was always supposed to be doing. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but when you feel like you're really in the right place at the right time. And I finally feel like that. I was like, I was almost in the right place, almost in the right place. And now...
You're in the right place.
Yeah.
And so I hear that San Diego Writers, Inc. is having some events in October.
They have a conference, actually, that it starts on the 25th of October, and it runs to the 27th. And it's fairly inexpensive. It's a great way to get introduced into the community of San Diego Writers, Inc. On the 27th, I will be teaching a class in characterization. And another wonderful event that's coming up this in October, the 25th to the 27th, is San Diego Writers Circle is going to be performing their first annual one-act plays. And that's in conjunction with the Horrible Imaginings Film Festival. And that's at the Digital Gym in North Park. And that would be the 27th and the 28th at 7 p.m. So if you want to either come learn about craft or you want to support local artists, a couple of really awesome things are going on this weekend.
So the names of those two events are?
The San Diego Writers, Inc. Fall for Writing Conference. Mm-hmm. So if you Google San Diego Writers, Inc., it'll pop up. And, nine classes you can take for something like $100 and from top-notch instructors. And then the other one is called Darkness Unwound, and that's the series of spooky one-acts that's at the Digital Gym.
Okay. Well, good information out there. One last question. You're now busy editing your first online literary journal, The Literary Vine, nice name.
Thanks.
And finishing your first book, The Seven Essential Writing Tools. Where can we find this journal, and when will your book become available?
The book should become available in January, if all goes well, but nothing has gone exactly according to plan.
Of course.
I've had to learn to a lot of patience throughout this whole process. And if you go to my website, www.thewriterinyou.org, it'll hopefully we'll be announcing when that is coming out. And the literary journal is we're kind of taking a slow track, meaning the best material. So we're just accumulating for the Literary Vine, we're accumulating some amazing material. So we kind of want to keep the call out there. So if there's any people that write short stories or, you know, even excerpts from books that want to submit, we're happy to look at those as well.
Oh, keeping an eye out for those things.
Yeah.
Well, Marnie, our time is up, but thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being here.
For more information on Marnie Friedman and her work, please visit her website, again, at www.thewriterinyou.org. This is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
February is National Heart Awareness Month, and today we have some important heart health news for women. Did you know that heart attack symptoms in women can be quite different from men's? Heart disease is often thought about as a man's disease, but recent studies show that heart disease is actually the number one killer of women in America. Getting immediate, appropriate care is the single most important thing you can do to lessen the damage of a heart attack. Why? Because every minute of delay means more heart muscle is damaged. Also because within the first few hours after a heart attack, if untreated, there is a higher risk of fatality. Some symptoms of heart attack are the same in men and women. These include squeezing chest pain or pressure, shortness of breath, sweating, tightness in chest, pain that may spread to the neck, arm, or jaw, a feeling of heartburn, and sudden dizziness or brief loss of consciousness. But other symptoms are more likely to occur in women, such as indigestion, dizziness, nausea, unexplained weakness or fatigue, discomfort or pain between your shoulder blades, recurring chest comfort, or a sense of impending doom. If you have any of these signs, you should seek help immediately. Have an action plan in case of a heart attack. Always call 911 immediately. Give CPR if the patient is not breathing. Get to the hospital quickly. The longer it takes to get treated, the more badly damaged the heart will be. And if you don't know CPR, find a class and sign up. It's easy to learn, and it can save lives after a heart attack. Use of an automatic external defibrillator can increase the odds of surviving a heart attack dramatically. 60% of patients who receive defibrillation with an AED will survive a heart attack, versus only 10% who are revived using CPR alone. Contact your doctor for a heart-to-heart talk, and for more information, you can visit heart.org.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show.
We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space,
to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso.
We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery.
We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road,
A.K. Jules,
Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road.
We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment.
If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.